Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.BiteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Today, my very special guest is going to be Lee McCormick, and we are going to be talking about his book, The Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag. But before I bring Lee on, I do want to let everyone know that I just created a wonderful inspirational calendar for 2015. It's called the Dare to Dream in 2015 calendar, and you can find that, which is available on our website, www.biteradio.me. And just right there in the front is a YouTube video, which shows all of the 12 months. There are wonderful nature photos that I've taken throughout the year, and also has an inspirational message for each month. And those messages are topics that are from my new book, which is called It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites. So definitely check that out. Get some for the holidays. It's a wonderful gift. And also, again, to check out on the website under my book link, I have the new link that has direct contact to my Joy Potential book, as well as the new book that I just mentioned. Okay, again, today my very special guest is going to be Lee McCormick, and he is co-author, along with Mary Faulkner, of Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag, A Transformational Guide for Living Happy, Joyous, and Free. During those times when life seems empty and we're feeling lonely, lost, or less than, or even struggling with addiction, it's often because our spirit has become squashed. We've disconnected or shut ourselves down. You hear it in the stories we tell, driven by injury, false beliefs, fear. We accept this as manufactured vision of ourselves as true. Yet our lives have the ability to go from living hell to living our version of paradise when we release our spirit from bondage. Lee is the founder of the Ranch Discovery Center in Nunnally, Tennessee, and the Canyon Treatment Center in Malibu, California. He is also co-founder of Nashville's Integrative Life Center and IOP-PHP Community Recovery Program in Nashville, Tennessee. He is also the executive producer of the documentary Dreaming Heaven, in which he plays a leading role. And also, for your information, I did have a show last September 25th with Jenny Gentry about Dreaming Heaven. It's a wonderful movie. You can always go to my website under the archives page, and I have an alphabetical list of former guests. Just find Jenny Gentry's name there and click on that and listen to that show as well. So again, Lee was the executive producer of that documentary. He's also author of the Spirit Recovery Meditation Journal, Meditations for Reclaiming Your Authenticity, and a co-author of Dreaming Heaven, The Beginning is Near. For more information about Lee, Spirit Recovery, and various resources and journeys, you can visit his website, which is spiritrecovery.com. Do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Lee to the show. Good day, Lee. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Robert. It's good to be with you, man.
Well, I'm really looking forward to today's show. I've heard from several people in my circle have been really anxiously awaiting to hear what you have to say today. So anyway, I'd like to, first of all, start with, I think one of the best places is really kind of at the beginning and get a definition of terms. So I would like, if you wouldn't mind sharing, to share with the listeners a little bit about your background and what, you know, led you to spirit recovery and exactly what is spirit recovery.
Okay. Let me say this. The Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag book, the first half of the book is my story, my personal story. The detail of all of that is actually in the book. And my journey in waking up to, you know, who am I really, and to waking up to what's really going on here in life and in the world, and the quality and the integrity of the kind of lives that we live, and that reconnection to our personal truth and our authenticity, as opposed to those roles and identities that we for ourselves growing up in this culture today that really separate us largely a lot of times from our truth and our authenticity. We end up living a role, believing we're the role, and we're not the role. We're the one underneath all those masks. That journey for me started when I was 41 and I checked myself into a treatment center. Got into recovery as such. And my experience early on in recovery was, I was grateful for the help. I was grateful for the opportunity to just stop my craziness, to learn about being addicted, because I had no idea what any of that stuff was or meant. And for all the gratitude and all of the gifts of that early recovery process, I also could not buy into the whole living life by a definition of my name's Lee and I'm an addict. That felt like one more social conditioning process to me. It was like, okay, well, here's a new book of rules to live by now if I want to be good enough. And I wasn't interested in that. I wanted to stop the suffering and stop the stupid and stop the self-inflicted misery. But I wasn't interested in adopting a new cultural identity. So I largely just kind of started asking the universe and asking life to help me reconnect, to help me find answers and perspectives and points of view. And, life responds. It was my introduction to the realization that, life really is conscious. And, this whole creation we live in is conscious, and life is amazing, and it's on our side, and that if you really sincerely and genuinely ask for help and support, things happen, And so that led me into a lot of experiences, led me to the Toltec work that, was reflected in the film and the book Dreaming Heaven. It led me to do a lot of Native American ceremonial work. It led me to read a lot of books, and just virtually anything that looked like it could hold a point of view or an experience that could help me grow and expand and learn, I just said yes to it. A lot of things I did at one time and went to one meeting or went to one group, and, that was cool. And it wasn't like I was looking for the answer. I was looking for opportunities to just sort life out. And one thing led to another, and that's what got me here. It is a journey.
Yeah, I'm sure. Now, the medicine bag aspect of the book, that refers to, you mentioned that the first half of the book is autobiographical, and the second half has the tools, the medicine bag aspect?
Yeah, the second half of the book I co-wrote with a really great friend of mine, a lady named Mary Faulkner, who's written a couple women. She's written several books, women's spirituality books and you know, self-help books. And she's just a great writer, Mary is, and a great teacher. And the second half of the book, each chapter is a practice or a point of view or, you know, an awareness or information that between Mary and I, we have found to help either us personally or their practices that we've used in working with other people and helping them deal with their issues and to help in transforming their lives. You know, and I'll say our point of view and why it's so easy for Mary and I to work together is we both really believe that the fundamental issue here is that we're born into a culture and a state of affairs, basically, in the world that demands that we abandon our authenticity and truth for the sake of fitting into the world. And we're programmed to see the world in particular ways. And, you know, the whole nature of society is that society should come first, and you as an individual and your authenticity and truth need to come second or third, because a good person does what everybody wants them to do. A good person fits into the matrix first. A good person gives up, you know, their power for the sake of living up to the expectations of others and systems and, you know, all of that stuff. And that just leads to an inherent disconnection from our integrity. And so it's, you know, we really are kind of in our cultures, our world, the human world, is in a real catch-22 these days, because it's very obvious there's a serious lack of integrity in our cultures and our politics and our religions and our lives. There's a serious disconnection. But nobody wants to question the basic tenets that our societies are built on, and that's where the foundational issues are. They're in the basic tenets and perceptions of life and reality that we keep passing forward from generation to generation.
Yeah. I can understand completely the what appears, you know, the society's attempt, you know, to basically put us into a box and kind of have us respond, you know, where they'll present a stimulus and we respond, you know, and just kind of keep it like that. With the, you know, the idea of being authentic and kind of being true to oneself, do you find that, like, for example, in education, you know, I mean, that's one area where, I mean, the conformity is really seems to be, you know, strict, you know, where you know, students are supposed to follow, you know, a certain grade, pass certain tests, you know, and if anybody thinks outside the box or doesn't, you know, react, quote, appropriately, then they're seen as disruptive and not, you know, really not fitting in and not being a good student, you know. So my question is, how do we remain authentic or express our authenticity without necessarily creating friction in our lives, or is that just a natural outcome? You know, I mean, being authentic if it doesn't fit into the system, then it's going to create friction.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And first things first. You know, what I've found over the years, and what I'm speaking to, it's not about judging the culture. It's not about making something wrong or bad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just about the fact of, okay, well, if all of this is so true, what we've been taught and the blanket accepted belief systems of our cultures, if it was all the truth, then why are we such a mess? Why are we still killing each other over religious arguments? Why are we still, why are people still starving, on one side of town, and on the other side of town, they're driving Rolls and living in, multi-million dollar homes? Why is the state of humanity so chaotic and destructive and just crazy town? If it's built on the truth, then why is it this way? So it's like, okay, well, if you start questioning things sincerely, I think you find that it's not really true. It's just what we've been taught to believe. It's what our parents and our systems taught us to believe, and it's because they believed it. And so it's not about judging. It's literally about just coming to the realization that, folks, it's time that we start questioning it, not from a place of judging it, but questioning it from a place of, okay, well, where is the truth? Where is peace in this? Where is connection? How do we create a deeper, more grounded way of life that's more respectful of life and start letting go of all this ego-based insanity and the judgments and all that? And you really can't do that without there being some friction. There's going to be some friction. There's friction in our personal lives when we really wake up and start dealing with our issues and our messes and our addictions and the legacies of suffering that we've inherited. There's conflict in all of that. But it's a conflict that as you resolve the conflicts, then you let go of the argument. And you don't resolve a conflict by one guy's right and one guy's wrong. You resolve a conflict by coming to the realization that, there may be 10 rights and 10 wrongs in the same room at the same time with 10 different people, but we can all live without the insanity of demanding that we all see things the same way, that we all must agree it to be okay. So it's about coming to a more evolved way of living with ourselves first and then with each other. And it always begins with us as individuals. The foundation of all of this is about each one of us as individuals taking 100% responsibility for the quality of our lives, one person at a time, and coming to terms with our own anger, our own fear, our own judgments and projections. And, we have to be willing to do what's necessary in order to resolve that stuff so that we can just be happy. And, and we can be okay with ourselves. Once you're okay with yourself, then it's easy to move into a space of helping and supporting other people. And then you can come together and start creating systems that are grounded in a greater awareness. I'm talking about a big picture. And when, our book is really about how do I do this as an individual? Because, again, that's where the work is individually. I can't save you and you can't save me and nobody can save anybody else. Not really. And so we each have to wake up and take this level of responsibility for ourselves. And it is one day at a time.
That is, that's very true. And it really does start with yourself, and once you kind of get your own house in order, then you're much more empowered, to be able to help others. Now in your example, you indicated, addiction and going into recovery. The spirit recovery not only deals with addiction, but also other types of issues. Or I guess the idea of if we're disconnected from our truth, our authentic self, or basically just disconnected from our spirit, I guess. Isn't that what who the book is intended to help?
Yeah, it really is. It's, there's all forms of manifestations of suffering and fear and trauma. One person might be traumatized as a child and they develop an eating disorder. Eating disorders are about 80, 90% of eating disorders are directly related to sexual abuse, you know, or trauma. Mm-hmm. And eating disorders largely develop out of a need to try and control something in order to have some sense of safety in the world and in your body. And I'm just using this as one example. You know, one person might develop an eating disorder, and another person might start drinking, you know, and may become an alcoholic. Another person may really internalize all the anger and rage and fear from that experience, and they may become just a total control freak and a rager because the energy, that poison that's inside of them energetically, it has to come out. So, you know, after all the years, I've spent 16 years working in the addictions field and the treatment business, and you see all forms and fashions of how this suffering and this misery manifest externally. And the truth is, all of those are symptoms. They're not the real problem. In our culture, we want to make alcoholism the problem. Alcoholism is not the real problem. It's a symptom of the problem. You know, anorexia, as powerful and destructive as it is not the real problem. It's the underlying brokenheartedness, suffering, trauma that person has ingested and has, you know, that's the real issue. So the suffering and the symptoms, on one hand, we have to deal with them because you'll die from it. You know, it'll take you out. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to stop the bleeding or you're going to lose the patient. And at the same time, the moment you accept responsibility for yourself in your life, you also accept responsibility for the opportunity to work on those issues and to heal those things and to work through it and let it go, and let it go over and over and over, rather than the old traditional point of view in recovery, was that, you know, if you're an alcoholic, then you need to define yourself. My name's Lee, I'm an alcoholic, and I would do that every day and go to meetings every day. Well, that's not a way out. There's not an end game there. You're still living with this shroud. You're still living with the shroud of the energy of those old behaviors wrapped around you all the time. No, you're not using, but you're certainly not free. You know, and your windshield and perception of life and reality is certainly not clear and clean, because you're seeing everything through the beliefs and the story of the identity of my name is, and I'm a, you know, a this or a that.
Doesn't that kind of reinforce the symptom? I mean, by saying I am an alcoholic, you know, by continually saying, you know, it kind of reinforces the symptom, like you said, you know, rather than, you know, kind of eliminate. Ideally, wouldn't one want to eliminate it and not identify themselves as an alcoholic at all?
Well, the bottom line is you have to take 100% responsibility for the situation you're in if you're really going to change it. Okay, right. You have to own it before you can change it. So I had to own that I was addicted. No argument about that. I was absolutely addicted to my drug of choice, right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, that addiction did not define what I am. It defined the situation I was in. I was living with an addiction. It's like living in a bad marriage, you know. But I wasn't the bad marriage. I was the guy who entered into that relationship. And so, you know, the opportunity is to do the work to unravel those behaviors, to shift that energy, to do the work on the underlying issues that fed into that addiction coming to be in the first place. And then at the same time, you're recreating your relationship with yourself. Well, if I continue to identify by the disease, by the issue, then I'm going to build a life that's woven like a fabric with all of those perceptions and beliefs still hanging on to me. And it's really, for me, it's as simple as that. Is that what you want to do? Do you want to live? You know, it would be like saying, my name's Lee, and I am a cancer. Well, people that are cancer survivors, they never forget that they had cancer, but they don't introduce themselves as a cancer.
Right. True. That's very true.
You know, you don't forget that you were addicted. You don't forget that you're an alcoholic, you know, or that you can't drink alcohol without getting whacked. You know, you don't forget that you have a peanut allergy. If you do, you eat a peanut. Find out what happens. You know, so it's just, it's kind of an over, not kind of, it to me, it's just an absolute overkill. It's like, all right, guys, you know, because we have so little faith in ourselves, and that was established in childhood before any of these other issues, but because I have so little innate faith in the truth of me, I am willing to take on the identities that are offered to me as an addict or an alcoholic, just because that will at least give me some identity, and it will at least give me some explanation for why my life was such a mess. But the real problem is that that's not addressed the genuine lack of faith that I have in myself and have lived with that lack of faith through my whole life. So the solution is to find your path back to reclaiming faith in you.
Mm.
You know, to where I no longer live by these roles and these masks and these externalized identities. I now live a genuinely connected relationship and live from a genuinely connected relationship to my own heart and spirit.
Yeah, that would really be getting right at to the root of it. I mean, really, that's kind of getting back to the point where, you know, the behavior began, you know, our coping mechanism began to deal with that lack of connectedness.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, yes. that's the way I've seen it, you know. And you know, the deal is, man, there's 20 million people in the United States a year. I think it's 20 million people a year in the U.S. that seek some kind of help for drug and alcohol issues, mental health issues. You know, there's so many people given so much energy to trying to live a better life, trying to be happy, trying to find some peace. And, you know, they're doing their part. I mean, I've owned several treatment centers, and I've worked in this business a long time. And I listened for years to the story that the treatment business tells. And the story the treatment industry tells is that, well, the reason that only 30 or 40% of the people are successful in recovery is because the disease of addiction is so powerful, or the reason that our business is not more successful or our clients are not more successful is because they just really don't want to get better. And you know what? That's just such a cop-out lie. It's bullshit. You know, and the treatment industry, of course, you know, from a business sense, the treatment industry doesn't want to own the fact that, you know, we're not very effective. We're effective for, you know, in a first-time stay in treatment, we're effective for less than 30% of the people, according to all the figures. Well, why isn't the business taking more responsibility for the lack of effectiveness? You know, it's the same cultural thing that our values are so twisted, you know, that we're willing to just continue to accept excuses over situations that actually could be remedied if we would just look at it and approach it with what you say in the 12-step world is ruthless honesty. But we're not very ruthlessly honest when it comes to our business practices, as long as we're making money.
See, the thing is, if they were more successful, I mean, they'd be putting themselves out of business, so to speak. But, you know, I mean, of course, that is twisted, you know, in a way. But, I mean, it's a way, it's like, you know, predetermined obsolescence, you know, the whole idea of having things, you know, break down so that they come right back to you and you're going to have to buy again, you know. If you don't succeed in treatment, you're going to have to come back again. So you're kind of getting that repeat business. And And of course, that might be cynical,
well,
but you know, I don't know, because I mean, I just, you know, when I look at the pharmaceutical industry, you know, and just the proliferation of drugs, you know, which are all treating symptoms, you know, and you talk about how many, you know, people are, you know, drug addicted. I mean, alcohol or even prescription drug addiction has just gone through the roof, and it's, you know, and it's, to me, it really, it, you know, it masks what the issues are. You know, it really doesn't get at what the problem is, and it just promotes the pharmaceutical business. And, you know, and I just, it irritates me no end when I see, you know, a drug being advertised with the possible side effect being death. I'm like, no, wait a minute, you know, that is not what we should be working toward.
Well, no, I agree with you totally. And, you know, we can find a lot of fault with our systems, and the truth is, the power to change all that is our responsibility. It keeps coming back to us as individuals. You know, if as individuals, we as a culture said, you know what, the real issue here is that we eat garbage for food. We eat all this processed crap. We drink sodas and diet sodas. You know, we're just pouring all kind of garbage into our bodies. That's undermining the integrity of our physical body and our health. And then, you know, we're living in a culture that we have decided that the house I live in and the quality of the car that I drive is more important than me having peace and freedom in my life and spending time with my kids, so I'm going to be a workaholic. And then my wife's going to have to work, or my husband or my partner's going to have to go to work too, because we're in debt so deep that to maintain the mask of affluence and success, where everybody's going to have to just work their whole damn life away in order to accomplish that, and we're going to stress out and stroke out with anxiety over paying all of the damn bills for all the stuff that we can't enjoy because we're so busy trying to make ends meet for the sake of the mask that we're wearing. And it's like, okay, at what point, y'all, are we just going to stop this insanity?
Yeah.
You know, at what point do you unplug and step back and say, wait a minute, you know, what am I doing? And I think culturally there are people coming to that point today. You know,
yeah,
I think
it's a slow process.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, you know, your DVD, your movie, Dreaming Heaven, really, I mean, that to me, that was a wonderful, wonderful movie that really got to the essence of really tuning into oneself and really kind of putting our attention where it should be. So, you know what, Lee, we're a little bit past halftime. I want to take just a quick break, just for about a minute or two, and then I believe we have a caller who will want to ask you a couple questions. So let me take that quick break, and then we'll be right back, okay?
Okay, cool.
Okay, great.
This is Roy Worley at mysticalship.com. R.T. Sharp has done it again. His new book, It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites, with BITE, B-I-T-E, being an acronym for Bringing Inspiration to Earth, has once again hit a home run. Unlike R.P. Sharp's first book, Joy Potential, which was a uniquely original story containing a message of hope and inspiration for everyone regardless of where they happen to be on their personal spiritual path. It's No Secret is a compilation of awareness, insights, guidance, and wisdom that can help anyone navigate through their lives on a daily basis. It's No Secret also contains resources and references that enable a person to find expanded information on a variety of issues that affect all of us. Order It's No Secret today. I guarantee it will be a valuable resource for help with whatever your needs are.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Lee McCormick, and he is co-author, along with Mary Faulkner, of the book Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag, A Transformational Guide for Living Happy, Joyous, and Free. And again, you can find out more about Lee, also the book and resources and the journeys that they provide by visiting the website www.spiritrecovery.com. And again, I do have a direct link to Lee's website in the show page description. Okay, Lee, we're back.
All right.
All righty. Okay, great. Now, I have a caller, and she is Bonnie from California. So she has a couple questions for you. Hello, Bonnie?
Yes. How are you?
Welcome to the show. Good, thanks.
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. So you have a couple questions there for Lee?
I do. Hi, Lee. It's nice to talk to you.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. I just started reading your book. I have to admit I haven't finished it, but I'm really looking forward to getting to the end of it. And my question is, I have twin boys. They're 17, and we've been battling addiction with them, heroin addiction, for almost 5 years now. So they've been in and out of group homes and juvenile hall, and you know, even when they are sober, they're sad and anxious and depressed. And I know that all of the help that they've received so far has been one of a punitive one in a system that really doesn't understand the addiction. And it doesn't seem like anybody's really addressed the emotion that's causing the pain. And so my one son asked me 2 days ago if I could please help him, that he needed to get into a rehab, that he can't do it by himself. So I know, you know, he's young, and when they're under 18, your resources for a rehab is pretty limited. But we did find one that we're going to go check out on Sunday. But my concern is, and I'm not even concerned about the money, even though that is an issue with my husband and I, you know, we're going to do what we need to do to try and get him help. But is there something that I should ask this program specifically about how, you know, is it, do they deal with the emotion and not just the behavior? Do they get to the bottom of what's really causing, you know, the heroin addiction? Because I so agree with what you're saying. It's not the heroin. There's something there that's causing the pain. And I know at 17, you don't really understand, you know, yourself, let alone being able to connect with your spirit. You know what I mean? You don't even know who you are. So they're young. But
yeah. Yeah. What part of California are you in?
I'm in Pismo Beach.
In where?
Pismo Beach.
Oh, in Pismo. Okay. Okay. Well, you just said it as far as the question. I mean, you asked them what you want to know. I mean, do they do core issue work? You know, just ask them simply, how do you view this? Because a lot of traditional programs simply will define addiction as a disease, and that is the problem, and that's what they focus on. And honestly, if you have the awareness, with the awareness that you have, that's a huge gift, because you understand there's a lot more to this. So you're going to hold that bigger space for your boys. And even if they go into a very traditionally structured program, you know, get them a copy of my book and tell them to read it. And, or ask them to read it. Gosh, you know, I've got a friend in Marin that has a sober living house. I lived in Malibu back and forth for 12 years. I've got a lot of friends on the coast. And at 17, you know, I've got some friends down in LA that do sweat lodges and vision questing work, and have spent years working with young adults and with gang members, and you know, working with people who just have never found their connection to society, and so they find some way to medicate that situation. You know, and I'd be glad to connect you with those people, and they may be able to be a real asset to you and to your sons, because it'll connect them to a whole other frequency of consciousness. It'll connect them to people that have a much bigger point of view on life. And that may be a help. But what you said to me are the questions that I would suggest to ask. You know, I also would be perfectly willing to talk to your sons on the phone if they were interested. Because honestly, the process, it really is one day at a time and one piece at a time. And if they can just get grounded and get clean and stop bleeding, then the opportunities to connect with something that will resonate with them can be very evident. You know, they will show up. There's a movement called Refuge Recovery. A man named Noah Levine, Noah's from Santa Cruz, and Noah was like a total mosh pit headbanger, total character, wild man. And Noah's one of the coolest people I've ever met. He has a book out called Refuge Recovery. And he also has a book, God, what's his first book? Dharma Punks. He started a movement called the Dharma Punks. And he's an avid recovery guy, and his whole recovery process is built around Dharma practice and meditation, you know, and the fourfold path and the Buddhist wisdom. And that may resonate with your sons. And the Dharma Punks, man, they're all tatted up. I mean, they look like a crew of gangsters, and they're all sweethearts.
right.
So there's options. You know, if you write down Noah Levine, L-E-V-I-N-E, Noah has a sober living house in L.A., and he works all over the place. And there's a huge crew of refuge recovery people in the Bay Area. And a really good friend of mine who just left Nashville, where I live now, and moved to the Bay Area, a guy named Dave Smith, could absolutely be a resource for you guys.
Once they're 18, a whole new world opens up. But when you're under 18, you're really kind of limited as to, you know, programs that, you know, are good and effective and not punitive and not run by a probation, you know, court system kind of a thing. So, but I can't wait, you know, till, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. And when somebody's asking you for help, you need to jump on it, you know, so.
Yeah. You know, one thing, Bonnie, with this, you know, it sounds like, you know, Lee kind of mentioned several different possibilities, and probably, you know, go back and listen to the show in the archives and have your pen and paper to write them down. One of the things is that, you know, like with the medicine bag, is that, you know, different tools and different things will appeal to, you know, different people. So maybe by listing all of the different ones, you know, all of them that he listed, and then, you know, giving them to your kids, your boys, to just look at and see which one attracts them. You know, I mean, they're like different ones. So, I mean, maybe the Dharma one will, or, you know, so kind of
give them the
option. Yeah, give them the option and say, you know, and it, from what it sounds like, you know, that these aren't, you know, your probationary type. I mean, these are, you know, people who have been there, done that, and, you know, that can really relate, you know, to the boys.
Well, thank you so much.
Bonnie, you can email me at through spiritrecovery.com. It's one of my websites.
Okay.
If you go to spiritrecovery.com and you email me, I'll be glad to email you back some contacts and some names and stuff. And these are all people who've lived it and survived. And if, you know, and they would help because that's what they do.
Perfect. Okay. Great. Thank you so much for taking your time to talk to me, Lee. I thank you very much.
All right, my dear.
Thank you, Bonnie, for calling. Bye. All right, bye now. Yeah, well, thank you, Lee. That's very, very nice of you to offer that. And, yeah, so I appreciate that. But, you know, that's what the business should be about, right? Is helping folks get through this.
You know what, dude? I'm with all due respect, it's not even about the business. It's about life and what are we doing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an example of exactly what I'm talking about. That, you know, I could have said, well, listen, I can get them into our treatment program here in Nashville and here call our intake guy. You know, and it's like this is us. It's you. It's me. It's her. It's her sons. It's, you know, it's like, what are we valuing what are we really valuing in our culture today? What the hell are we doing? You know,
yeah.
And the guys, the people that I mentioned, you know, they're the kind of guys that, you know, Dave Smith would get in his car and drive down there and sit down and talk to her sons. If I called him right now, I guarantee you,
wow,
he'd say you'd go to San Francisco and drive down there.
Yeah.
You know, it's, but that's, those are the kind of networks that come about with the people who found a way to reconnect to their heart and their spirit. And they, once you've reconnected, you live from that place. You don't live for that little book of rules that you were taught as a kid you have to follow in life. You live from the integrity of your presence in the world, and it changes the entire nature of your of our experience here.
Yeah, I agree. And once you operate from that center, I mean, there's just so much satisfaction. I mean, you can go to bed at night feeling that, you know, that you made a difference, you know, and there's that ripple effect. I mean, you know, once you help one individual, they in turn are going to pay it forward.
Well, sure you do. Yeah, because life brings you together with people that the connections just keep going. And that's the integrity of life. See, I wasn't made aware in my culture of the amazing integrity there is to the fabric of life itself. Without us doing anything, there's just an integrity to life. You know, I was taught a lot of religious stuff, but I was not taught that the integrity of life has nothing to do with religion, and it has nothing to do with beliefs, and it has nothing to do with any of the stuff that our culture calls important, and it's there anyway. It's always there. You know, there's an integrity to each breath that we take and to every click on the, every tick on the clock. And if we're open to it, we realize it, and things just happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I'd like to take a couple of minutes, guys. We probably have about 13 minutes left. I want to kind of maybe just talk about a couple of the tools that were in the part two of filling your medicine bag. And one of them, you know, you talked about kind of the fabric of life. And one of them that you have is called Traveling the Circles of Life. What exactly do you mean by the circles of life? Is that kind of who we have in our daily interactions?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the, in fact, it's, that's interesting. Yes. I just led a 3.5-hour workshop this morning with a group of women that are in a treatment program around creating a medicine bag. And the foundation of this is to become aware of how do you hold your life, and that whole concept and that language of literally, do you have an awareness of how you hold your life, your life, my life, all of us, we each have created a life for ourselves through the choices that we make. You know, we create it through the inheritances of legacy and belief and all the stuff that came with being born into your family and being born into your hometown. And so we all have created a life, and we've woven together this fabric that is our life, that is what we believe we are. But we're never taught to really consider the integrity and the nature of how you hold your life. And if you even look at it that way, consider that you are literally holding your life right now like you would hold a child that you love, and you're holding that life, and you're deciding with every choice, with every movement, with every action that you take, you're determining the integrity and the quality of what your experience in life is, and you're determining the integrity and quality of your life's experience by the way that you hold your life, the amount of respect that you hold for yourself, you know, the amount of compassion that you hold for yourself, how forgiving you're willing to be or have learned to be through practice, you know, how fierce you've become, and how determined you are to be honest and to be true to yourself and to not sell yourself out, you know, and to not hurt yourself or go against yourself, you know, through addictions or patterns of behavior that you know are self-destructive. And life works in these big circles. It just seems to, what goes around comes around. We all know that old saying. And you know what? Life is a series of great arcs and circles. So if we develop an awareness and a willingness to hold our life with respect and with compassion and with appreciation and gratitude and with a little spark of imagination and energy and creativity, you know, we have to remain open. If we want something new and great to come along in our life, then we have to be willing to allow something new and great to come along in our life. You know, people say all the time, oh, my God, I wish I had more fun. And you could turn right around and say, well, come on, let's go sled down the hill. They're like, oh, no, I can't. I got to get back to work. And it's like, well, exactly. You don't really want to have more fun, you know.
Yeah.
The hell with work. Go sledding. Good grief.
I know. Yeah.
You know,
that's the one thing that you know I've really you know become aware of quite often is just with having shows where people would call in, you know, indicating they wanted a certain thing to happen in their life or to manifest in their life, and yet their actions they don't take action first of all in many cases, and then if so, then their actions are completely contrary to what it is that they say they want to attract.
Well, it is, and a lot of that comes back to the foundation of what we're taught to believe in as kids, and that foundation is just saturated in fear, and so we're afraid. If I let go of the way my life is, for the sake of living a greater life, then I may lose what I have, and if I lose what I have, then what's going to happen to me? You know, and what I've realized. Is that, you know what, I got to be willing to let the way things are fall apart if I really want something greater to come. And the old has to go before the new is going to arrive. That's just the way it is. So you're going to have to be willing to hang out. You're going to have to be willing to hang out over that big, dark abyss for a little period of time before the white knight's going to show up and save you. You know, it takes courage. It takes courage to create a great life and to allow that to happen.
I agree. Yeah, definitely. And letting go and creating that space. Now, I want to make sure we get one more topic in because it's one of my favorite topics. And you talk about it a lot in your book. As a matter of fact, you have one of the medicine tools is meditating with nature. And nature plays a big role, I think. You know, don't you? Why is it that you have nature in there so much? And I mean, to me, I find you know nature to be completely inspiring, and I just love being in that space.
Well, to put it real simple, we are just a tiny little aspect of nature. We're a tiny little aspect of the whole. We're a part of the wind, and the trees, and the grass, and the ocean, and the mountains. You know, we are a part of that. We're an aspect of it. We're not separate from the rest of life. We're not separate from the fabric of life. And culturally, you know, we humans have come to this point of view that we're kind of above it all, and it was all created to be here for us any way we choose to interact with it. And so we've become incredibly self-destructive because we've come to a place of incredible ignorance and arrogance in our relationship to life and the fabric of life. And nature is us. You know, the earth is, our physical bodies are an extension of the earth. Our bodies are born of the body of the earth, the body of the mother. And we're irrevocably connected to the frequency of the earth. We're not human without it. You know, and so bringing our attention back to the subtlety and the beauty and the magic and the freshness and the aliveness of the natural world, it wakes us up. To a degree, it's like a guitar, you know, our being is not unlike a musical instrument that's just gotten way out of tune because we haven't really taken care of it. And if you take it back into alignment with the truth of what it is, of what we really are, and we get back realigned with nature and the cycles and the seasons and the food that we eat seasonally and the groundedness of being connected to the natural world, the real world, then we come back into alignment and we come back into tuning. You know, it's like tuning a guitar.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's profound and it's sweet. And the truth is, it's innate in us. We don't have to learn it. What we need to do is stop doing what we've been doing. And it's almost like it will happen naturally because it is our nature.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Well, gosh, we're down to the last few minutes, Lee. So I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I really appreciate you taking Bonnie's call. If there's one thing that you really hope that the reader will take away from reading Spirit Recovery, Medicine Bag, what is it that you hope that they would get?
That your life is such an amazing opportunity to just live a beautiful experience in this world, and that you're worth it. That no matter where you've been, what you've done, what you believe at this point in time, the truth is you're absolutely worth the time and the energy, and the opportunity to reclaim your faith in yourself, and that we were each created to be who we really are, underneath all the masks and the stories and the suffering. We were created to be who we really are. We were not really created to be what the world expects and demands of us. So come back home to your truth and your heart and your spirit, and do your best to live from that place, and you'll find a whole new world around you.
Yeah. Wow, that's beautiful. I mean, that's perfect, and it's just never too late to do that. It's never too late to start right now to be able to reclaim that.
No, man. We're eternal. We're not our bodies. We're the spirit that animates the body, and we're eternal beings. The body will return to the earth, and when you check out of your body, you go back to wherever it is we come from. So, you know, why not do it, though? It is never too late.
Yeah.
That's true.
Great. Well, again, Lee, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you chatting with us and talking about your book. It's really been, to me, it's a great tool that people can use to get themselves, get their spirit recovered, and start working toward a better, happier life. So thank you very much for your time today.
Well, thanks a lot, man. Anytime. Y'all take care.
All right, thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Lee McCormick, and he is author of The Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag. And again, you can find out more about Lee, Spirit Recovery, also some various resources, and also the journeys that they put together by visiting the website, which is spiritrecovery.com. And there is, again, a direct link to that website in the show page description. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.